This is WCCO, St. Paul, Minneapolis. For 30 years, you have heard those words echo through space. For 30 years, for 1 million times, those words have come through the radio loudspeaker in your home, in the barn during early morning milking, in your car, in the service station at the crossroads, in store, in shop, in office. For 30 years, radio, WCCO Radio, has provided you with farm and market information, news, music, entertainment, laughs. The WCCO microphone has become familiar everywhere, from the marble walls of the state capitol to the farm in Dodge County. Tonight, we are celebrating our 30th year of broadcasting here from WCCO. So, come with us as we go back through the years together. 30 years with WCCO, good neighbor to the Northwest.
The early days of crystal sets soon gave way to super sets.
WCCO progressed, and now you hear the very best.
People listen far and near, better coverage year by year.
Public servant, home of stars, in the homes and in the cars.
WCCO, WCCO, from 24 to 54, a symbol of the best in radio. WCCO, WCCO, for 30 years, good neighbor to the great Northwest.
When you are 30, 60, 75, or 90, when the anniversary day rolls around, you look back. You think of events long past. Your first day in school, a first train ride, family picnics, graduation day, that first kiss,
first love, your wedding.
The memories rushing back over more years than you care to count. Tonight we plan to take you back, back across the years, back across the memories of enjoyable moments you may have forgotten. It makes an impressive list, those memories. Oscar Danielson, Whoopi John, Dick Long, the Wheaties Quartet, Tina and Tim, Jack Malerick's Orchestra, the Politicians, Frank McInerney and Fred Lundberg, Paul Orberg, Selma Erickson, Peggy Beckmark, Doug Baldwin, Jerry Harrington, Cedric Adams, Clellan Card, Eddie Dunstetter, Ramona Gerhard, Florence Murphy, Marjorie McCready, Sig Mickelson, Joe Jung and the Three Strings, Eddie Fortier, Toby Prynne, Halsey Hall, Herb Paul, and many, many more. For the next hour, sit back, relax, and let us carry you back over the years. Let us recall for you names, voices, sounds. Back to enjoyable moments of the past 30 years. And then there was a young announcer at WCCO back in the 1930s. Dark-haired, handsome. He has since moved to the CBS Radio Network station in Washington. You have heard him over WCCO when you listened on a Sunday afternoon. We are pleased to present Eddie Gallagher from WTOP in the nation's capital, former WCCO announcer and your master of ceremonies for tonight.
Well, good evening, everyone. It's a real pleasure for me to be back here in the Twin Cities tonight and back at WCCO where I got my first start in the radio business. Oh, there's so many familiar faces here tonight and so many people I knew way back when, it seems like a real homecoming. But the real tribute goes to the people of the present WCCO staff who have been working for weeks in putting this special anniversary show together. To recall for you radio as it used to be, sit back now and listen. In the beginning, there was WLAG. As some of the old-timers will tell you, it was located in the Oak Grove Hotel in Minneapolis. And that, if you can remember way back to 1922, was the crystal set era. Radio in those days was pretty much an off-again, on-again proposition. There was some music, public service in the form of market reports, but a good many hours of nothing but silence.
It doesn't.
Here are the closing Minneapolis grain futures. December wheat, 138 and one quarter. December oats, 44 and five eighths. December rye, $1.12. Number two corn, 107 and one quarter. Number three corn, 106 and one quarter. We leave the air now until the next market report in 2 or 3 hours. This is WLAG, your Call of the North station in St. Paul and Minneapolis. Please stand by.
At first, nobody seemed to mind the long periods of silence in radio station schedules. It was so great a miracle merely to hear a voice coming from a mysterious collection of wires and coils and a cat's whisker. But gradually, the management of WLAG and the public desired something more than just market reports in silence. One day, for instance, a young sausage maker from Stockholm, who had assembled an orchestra to play genuine Swedish music on the vaudeville circuits and at the old Schubert Theater in Minneapolis, stopped in to see the management of WLAG.
Oh, I say, have you fellas ever thought of filling up some of those nothings you have on radio in between those markets? I have a fine Swedish band. We're playing over to Schubert. Real good, too, even if I say so myself.
Well, maybe you've got an idea, Mr. What was your name again?
Danielson. Oscar Danielson.
Oh, yes, Mr. Danielson. Well, I don't think I've ever heard of your band. What's it sound like?
Well, I just happened to have the boys outside. I brought them over so you could hear them. Oh, fellas, come in here. They want to hear a tune. Let's play that one we rehearsed.
And a deal was made. Oscar Danielson's orchestra did come on the station to fill the nothings on the schedule. And he was an instant success. Mail poured in by the truckload, and visitors thronged to see Oscar Danielson and his original Swedish orchestra. And this is the way it sounded. Remember?
Good often we rockin'. We open vårt program often med En kärleksnatt till Barcelona, presented av Oscar Danielson och hans orkester.
Yes, there's no question about it. Oscar Danielson's orchestra was a tremendous hit. A smash hit, we'd call it now. And the Scandinavian segment of the radio audience of the day loved the old folk tunes from back home. But there were others who wanted to hear the tunes from the old country, too. And the Germans were just as pleased when a local boy from New Ulm, Minnesota, was hired to play German schottisches and polkas. And that New Ulm boy you still hear him today was Whoopie John Wilford. It was tough to keep a radio station on the air back in the early 20s, and so WLAG ceased broadcasting in July of 1924. The business people were quite amazed at the uproar which occurred when the markets, the Swedish and German band music, was replaced by nothing but silence. They learned that radio and WLAG had already become an integral part of the economy of the area. The Scandinavians and the Germans not only missed their folk music, but the farmers had come to rely on the daily broadcast of market information. A service which meant dollars and cents in their pockets. So the businessmen of Minneapolis and St. Paul decided something had to be done. It's significant that the business people of both Minneapolis and St. Paul forgot their differences and agreed unanimously that radio had to go back on the air. The problem, as always, was money. A committee was formed to approach the milling industry, which at that time was the largest in the region. The Washburn-Crosby Company, later to become General Mills, accepted the challenge and agreed to put up half the money necessary to put radio back on the air, if the businessmen of Minneapolis and St. Paul would raise the other half. Well, it was a deal. And on the 2nd of October, 1924, WCCO, its call letter signifying the Washburn-Crosby Company, returned to the airwaves. The farmers were happy. They had their market reports back. The Scandinavians and the Germans could listen to the folk tunes once more. New names and new voices. New services began to be heard on the airwaves. Radio was progressing out of the diaper stage and was beginning to toddle. Not only were programs improving, but the radio sets themselves were undergoing change. The crystal set was becoming old hat. To be really modern now, you had to have a one-tube receiver with a loud speaker and a basement full of wet cell and dry cell batteries. As a symbol of growth, of change, of progress, WCCO had good reason for celebration on March the 4th, 1925. A new word entered the radio listener's language. Another miracle. Network, it was called. Special telephone lines reaching out thousands of miles, bringing voices of the great to the most remote corners of the continent. And with much fanfare, the management of WCCO announced a new service to its listeners in the Northwest. For the very first time in the history of the United States, the citizens could hear the inauguration of the President of the United States in their own living room. And it so happened on that very day, WCCO was having an inauguration of its own, the dedication of a brand new 5,000-watt transmitter way out in the country at Anoka. Well, it was a tremendous day. For weeks, newspaper stories, full-page advertisements proclaimed this new wonder, this new miracle. Not only would the voice of the president be heard in the Twin Cities, but now through WCCO's greatly augmented power, could be heard as far away as 100 miles from the Twin Cities. Could be heard as far east as Eau Claire, Wisconsin, south to Austin, west to Wilmer, and north to Brainerd. And radio set owners were swept into the spirit of the day. History in the making. They fiddled with the cat's whisker, made sure the battery was charged, checked the headphones. And then came the big day, the day thousands had been waiting for.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, girls and boys of the Northwest. We have gathered today for the common purpose of attending a great event in the history of the United States, the inauguration of Calvin Coolidge as president of this great republic. For the first time, science has made it possible for all America to join the audience greeting our chief executive as he assumes the heavy responsibilities of his great office. It is expected that the presidential oath of office will be given at 11:20, following which President Coolidge will deliver his inaugural address, lasting approximately 1 hour. The first number of the musical program, which we are broadcasting while we wait for the start of the inaugural ceremonies, will be Bring Back Those Rockabye Baby Days by Dick Long and his Nanking Cafe Orchestra. Less than 15 minutes, the start of the inaugural ceremonies will be made. We are advised by our direct telegraph wire from Washington. This program to which you have been listening will be concluded immediately before the moment the affair starts. We assure you, we will make the switch to Washington in ample time for you to hear the whole affair. May we remind you that the management of the Gold Medal Station is very anxious to know just how many listeners make up our audience this morning. With the splendid cooperation of the Northwest Radio Trade Association, the schools, the newspapers, and scores of organizations, we believe the audience listening to the Gold Medal Station will make up a good percentage of the national audience. We are particularly interested in hearing from groups and assemblages giving the number in attendance that we may make a fairly accurate estimate of the total figure. We will appreciate word from you.
We are particularly interested in hearing from groups and assemblages, the man said that morning on March the 4th, 1925. The groups and assemblages reported in all right, and their reports were not altogether favorable. In fact, they were most unfavorable, downright uncomplimentary. It was a most discouraging day for the management of WCCO.
What in tarnation is wrong with this dad-burned radio? I bought a new cat's whisker. I've checked those gall-blamed batteries and aerial. All the connections are tight. There's only one thing it can be. It's that gull-durned, dad-blamed radio station. I knew they shouldn't have moved the transmitter way out there in the country to Anoka. I'm going to tell them what I think of their darn transmitter.
Now, Lars, I've told you 1,000 times if I told you once to lose your temper over little things like that.
Yeah, but...
Now, you know it's not good for your blood pressure.
But,
Now, don't you dare interrupt. I like the radio as much as you do. But you don't see me losing my temper, do you? See how calm I am?
But,
now, Lars, I simply won't have it. I'm sure there's some logical explanation. There must be something wrong with the set. Besides, I won't have you using that vile language in front of the children. We'll have to call the radio station.
That little scene, repeated in so many homes that morning in 1925, was not altogether the fault of the radio station. It was true the transmitter had been moved out to the country. It was true the crystal set would not pick up the signal. But a 1 or 2 tube receiver would and did pick up the inauguration of the President of the United States perfectly. It was the end of the crystal set era, and merchants, to their amazement, found themselves beset with a new clamor for the vacuum tube radio receiver. That same day, WCCO staged an elaborate ceremonial program, inaugurating not only its new transmitter, but also the opening of the new studios in the new Nicollet Hotel. And what a night that was. The program went on for 5 hours, starting at 8:30 in the evening and continuing until the wee small hours.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the gold medal radio station, WCCO St. Paul, Minneapolis, broadcasting a program from the new Nicollet Hotel, Minneapolis, Minnesota. The operation of the station over the past few months has indicated to us various forms of entertainment which seem to be the most popular. We have endeavored to arrange our numbers to meet the approval of our listeners, and we hope that the entertainment which has been provided this evening will be acceptable. Gold Medal Station, Minneapolis, St. Paul, broadcasting. The Northwest is very proud of its numerous fine orchestras. This evening, we present to you one of these with which you are all familiar. George Osborne's original Nicollet Hotel Orchestra. Mr. Osborne will conduct the orchestra in a performance of the famous prelude in C sharp minor by Serge Rachmaninoff.
And on that thrilling festive night, a young coloratura soprano was one of the featured soloists. She was Miss Selma Erickson. Miss Erickson is still a resident of Minneapolis. And when we contacted her a few days ago, she told us that the years had taken some of that coloratura quality from her voice. But we were able to persuade her to come on this program tonight and recreate for you the number she sang on that night, March the 4th, 1925. Solveig song. So we are very pleased to present in person Selma Erickson.
Come, Sheffielder, go. Of next summer met all day lor, all day lor. Men in gang will do come all their wild jay beast, their wild jay beast. Og jay skal vento for del op to jeg sis del op to jeg sis
Selma Erickson. A young man who was just getting started in the entertainment business in 1925, a staff member of WCCO, a favorite of millions in the Northwest, and now a world-famous Hollywood personality, was also a featured soloist on that inaugural night program. we have a recording of the introduction and the actual selection played that night by the magician of the keyboard, Eddie Dunstetter.
And now, Eddie Dunstetter seats himself at the console of the mighty organ to play Nola as only he can play it.
And with that gala occasion, WCCO was launched upon years of service, years of entertainment to the people of the great Northwest. And radio entered still a new era. In those years, in the late 1920s, it became apparent even to the doubters, even to the scoffers, that radio was here to stay. Gone were the nothings on the schedule. There were no more blanks. New programs, new faces, new names, and new voices became familiar to every radio listener. And radio was searching, seeking something new, exploring, inventing. The spirit was, well, let's try it. Maybe it'll work. As humorous as some of those early efforts sound to us today, from them emerged a pattern of highly listenable, highly entertaining radio. Let's run down the list and see if these don't bring back a million memories for you. Remember the gold medal fast freight? Here, right out of our files, is the old theme.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? You have just heard the arrival of the gold medal fast freight. Aboard are the four singing members of the train crew, known as the Wheaties Quartet, and two famous passengers, the gold medal organist and the fast freight tenor, besides many, many sacks of gold medal kitchen-tested flour and millions of boxes of those delicious whole wheat flakes with all the bran, crispy, crunchy Wheaties.
Have you tried Wheaties? They're whole wheat with all of the bran. Try Wheaties, for wheat is the best food of man. They're crispy and crunchy the whole year through. The kiddies never tire of them, and neither will you.
So just
try Wheaties, the best breakfast food in the land.
And now tonight we have a real treat. In person, the original members of the gold medal fast freight. Bill Elliott, Nell Swenson, Philip C. Schmidt, and Ernie Johnson. And here they are to sing for you Dinah, just as they did 30 years ago.
Carolina, gave me Dinah. I'm the proudest one beneath the Dixie sun. News is spreading, but here's a song my heart keeps singing. Dinah, is there anyone fine in the state of Carolina? If there is and you know her, show her to me. Dinah, with the Dixie I'm playing, I will love to sit and gaze into the eyes of Dinah Lee.
My Dinah Lee.
My Dinah.
Every night, why do I shake with fright? Because my Dinah might change her mind about me. Do. To China, I would hop an ocean liner just to be with Dinah, just to be with Dinah, please.
My Dinah.
original Wheaties Quartet. And millions of housewives stood over there ironing and laughed at Mrs. Hutchinson's trials with her Swedish maid and Irish handyman, Tina and Tim. And perhaps you have forgotten that Tina and Tim were created by a young Minneapolis actress named Peggy Beckmark and is still in radio in Chicago. She has kindly given us permission to rebroadcast a portion of one of the first Tina and Tim episodes. Listen very carefully now to the character Mrs. Hutchinson in this skit. You know who she is? That's Florence Murphy of the Minneapolis Star and Tribune Promotion Department, and still heard daily on WCCO.
Feed on the pond, the swans on river, far, far away.
Presenting that great laugh sensation, Tina and Tim, transcribed for you by the makers of Maltomeal. Well, everything is serene and happy these days in the Hutchinson kitchen. Tina's quarrel with Tim and Inga has been patched up. Oscar the dog has been behaving himself, and Tina just doesn't seem to have any troubles at all. No doubt that accounts for the fact that as we look in on her today, she's singing.
No, 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 sweet Mr. Lee, at last her wife has found you. Ooh,
that's a pretty little ditty.
Oh, dropping from the eaves again, was you? How many times did I have to tell you to rap on the door?
I'm sorry, Tina, but I didn't want to interrupt the song you were singing there. What was it?
Oh, did you think it was pretty?
Sure, fine, fine. But I'm not sure I caught all the words.
Did you think my voice was better?
Well,
I met the singing teacher over to Inga's the other day, and she says the same thing about my voice as the other teacher did.
What was that?
She says if she was me, she would save it. Nothing funny about that, Tim. Tina. I guess I got unconnected on the phone. It was for you, too.
Oh, who was it?
It was that Mrs. Sherman.
Well, I'll call her back.
Yeah, you better do that. She wanted to talk with you.
Washington, 4538. Yes, please. Hello, Agnes? Oh, this is Carolyn Hutchinson. Hello? Hello, Agnes? There must be something the matter with that line.
Must be. I got unconnecting, too. Why don't you try it again?
Well, I will. Operator, will you give me Washington 4583? Hello, Agnes. There must be something wrong with the line. Hello? Well, that's funny. I could swear she slammed up the receiver.
Well, Mrs. Hutchinson, if she did, there was nothing to swear about.
I wonder.
Ladies didn't do things like that.
What, Tina?
I says if she did, it
Tina,
was
Tina, just a minute, please.
Yeah?
It seems to me you were having quite a conversation with Mrs. Sherman when I came in.
Oh, yeah, we was talking.
And you were disconnected?
Yeah, we was.
You're sure she didn't hang up the receiver?
Oh, I didn't think so. I didn't see why she should.
I'm wondering. Just what were you talking about?
Well, I was asking her about her rheumatism.
Her rheumatism? Well, she hasn't got rheumatism.
Well, I know that now. She told me.
Well, what made you think she had rheumatism?
Well, it was just something Mr. Hutchinson says that made me think so.
Something Mr. Hutchinson said? What, Tina?
Well, just last night, he says Mrs. Sherman gave him a pain in the neck.
And you told her that?
Well, sure. I just wanted to find out if it was catching.
Why, Tina Torgerson.
What's the matter with it?
Perhaps some of you will recall that fall day in 1924 when the new Memorial Stadium was dedicated on the University of Minnesota campus. The immortal Red Grange and the Fighting Illini came north to crush the hapless Minnesota Gophers. The broadcast of that historic game was done by Herb Paul, now of the Minneapolis Star and Tribune. And Herb is here tonight to recreate for you the closing seconds of that surprising and historic game.
There's the gun. The game is over. Minnesota defeats Illinois 20-7. Listen to that crowd cheer the Gophers. It's a big upset for Minnesota. The Gophers stopped the mighty Red Grange. What a way to dedicate a new stadium. Illinois and Grange were expected to win by several touchdowns. Remember, Grange scored 4 touchdowns in the first 15 minutes against Michigan. Today, it looked as if he might do the same against Minnesota. But he only got 1 touchdown. That came in the first 6 minutes of play. The Gophers, after that, held him in check. When he started his mighty sweeps behind Britain, they ran him to the sidelines. He was tossed for large losses several times by Captain Cox and Cooper at center. He failed to make a long run up to the time he was injured in the third quarter and removed from the game. I have never seen the Gophers keyed to such a high pitch as they were today. They played sensationally. It was Schutte's greatest game at left halfback. He carried the ball 282 yards in 32 plays. The Gophers made 16 first downs to only 6 for Illinois. And they carried the ball 352 yards to 109 for Illinois. What a victory to celebrate dedication of Memorial Stadium.
Another name in sports broadcasting became popular back then. Perhaps you remember tuning in for Halsey Hall and his broadcasts of the baseball games. And here's Old Hayes, Halsey, to recreate for you his description of the very first baseball broadcast he did on WCCO.
Yes, sir, ladies and gentlemen, it's a beautiful sunny afternoon out here at Nicollet today. While the teams are changing sides, let me run down again through the Miller lineup. At first base is Joe Hauser. Everyone's wondering if he can duplicate or come close to last year's all-time feat of 69 home runs. At second base, Andy Cohen. At shortstop, Leo Norris. At third base, Babe Ganzel. In the outfield from left to right, Ab Wright, Spencer Harris, and Buzz Arlett. And down there now in the bullpen, in case the Milwaukee Brewers get tough, are Walt Tauscher and Rosie Ryan. Ryan's back after a year in the big leagues 2 years ago, you know. He set an association record by appearing in 60 games, mostly in relief. All right, the Brewers are set. The pitcher is Lou Polly, who throws three-quarters overhand. He's a right-hander. They sometimes call him Line Drive Polly because of the enthusiastic way that the boys lay the hickory to his offerings. Just the same, he's pitched a 10-inning no-hit game, and there weren't too many line drives that time. Polly's getting set now to face the first hitter, Andy Cohen, in the first inning. Andy's twisting his cap, wiping his hands on his pants, tapping the plate, adjusting his belt. Now he licks his fingers, rubs them off. He does everything. Here's the pitch. Ball one outside. The infield stays normal for Andy. So does the outfield, moving in just a little bit. He hit 10 homers at Buffalo once, and he can't get over it. The pitch, and it's a line drive single right over the shortstop's head. Ab Wright's coming up. Big Ab, he looks every inch the tough guy. The outfielders start scratching their backs on the fences now. The pitch, Ab pops it up. Lynn Storti's under it at second and grabs it. One out, the singling Cohen on first, and here's Joe Hauser. Unser Cho handling that bat like an overfed girl handling a toothpick. They shift to the right on Joe. Polly looks at first, comes in, and holy cow, that one's gone. Way out to right. Looks like it will clear Nicollet Avenue. Yep, it does. Here comes Cohen around, and old Cho's off again as the Millers lead 2-0.
The owners of WCCO, formerly the Washburn Crosby Company, which by this time had become General Mills, began to take a careful look at their radio property. They were essentially in the grain milling and food business, and were beginning to wonder whether their energies might not be better devoted exclusively to their milling enterprise. With that thought in mind, they began in about 1928 to look around for ways to dispose of WCCO. As a matter of fact, one day in 1928, a General Mills board meeting was in progress. The directors were discussing that very problem. James Ford Bell, then board chairman of General Mills, was presiding. As we enter the boardroom...
Well, gentlemen, let's look
well,
at this thing.
WCCO has been known as the gold medal station for a number of years now. Yeah. You
well, if this decision were mine, I'd say sell out to the highest bidder
well,
right
I'd
now.
Well, I'd go along with that, but we don't have a bidder right now.
Excuse me, Mr. Bell. Excuse me, Mr. Bell.
It's all right, Miss Peterson. Speak right up. What is it?
Well, there's a young man waiting to see you. His name is Mr. Paley.
Paley? Paley? I don't know any Mr. Paley. I can't see him right now. Tell him to come back tomorrow.
Oh, well, excuse me, Mr. Bell. He says it's very urgent.
Urgent? What could be more urgent than our problem with WCCO right at this moment?
But, Mr. Bell, that's what he wants to talk to you about. WCCO.
Oh, is that right? Well, that's different. Ask him to come in.
Mr. Bell.
Yes, I'm Mr. Bell.
Pardon me. I'm sorry to interrupt. But it's very important, and I'm only in town for a short time. Now, I represent the United Cigar Company.
Cigar Company? But, young man, my secretary led me to believe that you were in the broadcasting business. She said that you were interested in WCCO.
I am, Mr. Bell. That is, my father owns the United Cigar Company, and he has just purchased a company known as the Columbia Broadcasting System. And we are interested in obtaining several radio properties in key markets. We have heard that you might consider selling WCCO.
Well, it so happens that just as you came in, we were talking about the possibility of selling WCCO. And, of course, you realize it's a valuable property. We have a good deal of money invested. Now, what did you have in mind? That is, what would you be willing to offer?
Well, it's rather difficult to say exactly. You people know how the broadcasting business is today. While it seems to be on a firm foundation, no great amount of money has been made in the industry yet, but there seems to be some indication that it has a promising future, and it's managed in the
After
proper...
some weeks of negotiation, a deal was made, and Mr. William S. Paley and the Columbia Broadcasting System did acquire 50% of WCCO. A few years later, CBS bought the remaining 50% and became sole owners of WCCO. And under the guidance of the Columbia Broadcasting System and young Bill Paley, WCCO did become everything the new owners had hoped. It became the other member of the family in every home in the Northwest. It was a constant companion from breakfast until bedtime. Its power was increased to 50,000 watts, the maximum allowed by the Federal Communications Commission. Its ever-expanding service endeared it to its millions of listeners. And there were new programs, new faces, new voices who became familiar in every Northwest home. Of all the staff members, though he rarely was heard on the air, probably no one was more beloved than the man who was manager of WCCO throughout the 1930s. Earl Gammons, now Vice President of the Columbia Broadcasting System in Washington, D.C. Earl, of course, has a good many fond memories of his life and his work here as a member of the WCCO family. Earl, what about those days?
WCCO and I are celebrating our 30th anniversary in radio. It was in October 1924 that I was instructed by my employer, Washburn Crosby Company, to go up and help with the publicity on a new venture called a radio station. I was confident that the officers of the company responsible for this purchase must have lost their minds. And after I had been on the new job for about 3 months, I was sure I had lost mine. The staff consisted of 14 people. Every day we climbed the hill to our studios in the Oak Grove Hotel to put on the so-called programs. Outside of the engineers, every member of the staff performed on the air. Stenographers doubled on the piano, and practically everyone was a news or market broadcaster. Few programs were scheduled more than a day in advance, if that long, and there was no worry about how long the programs lasted. None of the talent was paid, and we had no commercials. This last situation was soon corrected. WCCO has a great heritage, and the people of Minnesota, and particularly the Twin Cities, along with those of us who made our start in the industry at that time, will always owe a debt of gratitude to the late Donald D. Davis, who spearheaded the purchase of the station by Washburn Crosby Company. As long as it remained under their ownership, he was the inspiration and guiding light for all of us. I'm very happy to have this opportunity to join in these anniversary greetings, and I always point to WCCO with pride as the place of my birth in this industry.
And under Mr. Gammon's guidance, during the difficult years of the Depression 30s, WCCO gradually became the radio station as you know it today. It became a radio station of stature, not only in the home, but also in the economy of the Northwest. Those firms who saw the potential of radio advertising were as much pioneers as those who were heard on the air every day. To them goes a large share of credit for the success of this new service enterprise to people. And those advertisers, those business firms, soon found their brand names and their products were household words, as was WCCO. With the assistance of these sponsors and with their cooperation, WCCO developed new programs, new ideas, new areas of public service. And here in the Northwest, over WCCO, there were programs of sparkling entertainment, fine orchestra music, brilliant young singers. And here's a program that will take you back over the years. It featured Jack Malerick's orchestra.
Hormel presents Swing with the String. Swing with the String. Swing to the music of Jack Malerick and the Hormel Orchestra. The voice of Gertrude Donahue.
You're the most music.
Heydrich and his romantic violin. and the songs of Jack Fulton.
The night is young and you're so beautiful.
Jack Malerick and the orchestra start the program with Plenty of Money and You from Gold Diggers of 1937.
And there was drama, soul-stirring, spine-tingling drama. This drama was not calculated to fool the listener. It was meant to be entertaining. It was the brainchild of enterprising young actors, the sons and daughters of the Northwest who sought their place in the new world of entertainment. It was corny by today's standards, but the actors knew it was corny, and so did the audience, but still they loved it. But from that dramatic effort came the performers who have become big names in the world of entertainment today. And there was a young man who came to WCCO in the early 30s playing bit parts in dramatic skits for $3.50 a performance. And he has since become well-known and beloved to millions of Northwest listeners as Cedric Adams, entertainer, news broadcaster, and last but not least, the Duke of Magnolia. Cedric was not too far removed in time from the dusty streets of Magnolia when he appeared in the Twin Cities, when he was a student at the University of Minnesota, when he wrote for Captain Billy's famous Whiz Bang in Robbinsdale. But these, remember, were Depression 30s. You had to eat, and so did Cedric Adams. A young lady at WCCO in those days, Marjorie Ellis McCready, was writing and performing the female lead in a program called The Curtain's Part. And her handsome leading man was none other than Cedric Adams. And now try to remember that it's 1931. You're sitting by your radio waiting for The Curtain's Part.
Dingy room over Tai Wong's opium den. A room where malicious fate lies festering. Dick is beside her now, and he too is peering under the bed. But hush, the curtains part.
And that was the way that Cedric Adams earned his first $3.50 on WCCO, and was probably just worth it. Well, happily for Cedric and WCCO, that was not the last $3.50 he earned on this station. Cedric had something, and the advertisers recognized that. But just what it was that he had has been a subject of considerable speculation for many, many years. Perhaps it can best be defined as the attitude of the small-town boy who never ceases to wonder at the goings-on in the big city. The friendliness, the neighborliness, the cracker-barrel atmosphere of the small town came through in Cedric's voice as he talked on the radio. Many is the time that callers at WCCO have picked up the phone and said, "Well, you know, I'm a friend of Cedric's." Well, I suppose everybody is Cedric's friend. And to our knowledge, nobody ever calls him Mr. Adams. He's Cedric. He's Cedric the first time you meet him, and he's Cedric when you hear him on the radio, too. And as everybody knows today, Cedric was heard on the radio with increasing frequency. Remember the Pure Oil Potpourri starring Cedric Adams, Clelland Card, Jack Malerick's orchestra, and a vivacious young singer named Betty Brewer?
The Pure Oil Company presents The Pure Oil Potpourri, starring Cedric Adams, Clelland Card, Betty Brewer, and the Pure Oil Quartet, and Jack Malerick's orchestra. And now here is Pure Oil's man about town, the amazing and amusing Cedric Adams.
Yes, amazing and amusing, back in 1937. One advantage of going to a chiropractor is that you can use the X-ray he takes of your spine for a lampshade when he gets through. This sign on the back of a garbage truck at Two Harbors. Service with a smell. Casey Jones of the old railroad wreck fame wasn't christened Casey. His real name was John Luther Jones. He took the name of Casey from Casey, Kentucky, his hometown. Everybody says, I'm going to go up and jump in the tub. I've never made a survey on exactly how people get into bathtubs, but personal experience indicates that getting into a bathtub is one of the most cautious moves we ever make. One foot goes over gently, followed by the other, and then the rest of us. Not a sign of a jump. Language carelessness, I suppose. You'd better check your rabbit's foot in case you're carrying one. It's only the left hind one that's supposed to be any good as a luck piece.
Clellan Card will be along in just a moment. But first, dear Oil singer of popular melodies, Betty Brewer with Somebody Loves Me.
Somebody loves me. I wonder who. I wonder who he can be. Somebody loves me. How I wish I knew. Who he can be worries me. For every guy who passes by, I shout, hey, maybe you were meant to be my loving baby. Somebody loves me. I wonder who. Maybe it's you.
Up to now, we have used quite a number of recordings of the old shows, but in this instance, we were able to bring back in person not only many of the original members of that orchestra and Cedric Adams, but also Betty Brewer. She is now Mrs. Kenny Spears, wife of Kenny Spears, who was accompanying her on the guitar, who has been a member of the WCCO Staff Orchestra for 20 years. Over the years, there were many persons at WCCO who tried their hand at news, Cedric among them. He became probably more successful in the infant news broadcasting field because, well, because he's Cedric. And also because his newspaper connections and background made him qualified for the task. It was in 1934 that Cedric went on the air in his now familiar 10 p.m. spot for Maurice L. Rothschild Company. His popularity grew during the late 1930s. He acquired a new sponsor, Tasty Bread, in 1939, a sponsor that has been with him ever since. Many is the story that Cedric has covered in his news over the years, the stories of war, of government, of politics, the story told with the Adams chuckle, and yes, the stories of tragedy. Perhaps you remember that summer night of June the 18th, 1939. A calm night it was, the storm's fury spent. And here is the actual recording of the lead story in Cedric's broadcast that night.
The city of Anoka is ruined and shattered tonight. A tornado that whipped through Anoka, Champlin, Corcoran, Cedar, and Maple Grove at 3:20 this afternoon had taken the lives of 9 residents. 144 have been injured, and damage is now estimated at $2 million. Destroyed are the Anoka Armory, 3 churches, the post office, the Masonic Temple, and the high school. 300 homes in the Anoka area have been damaged or demolished.
And there was a young announcer at WCCO back in those days. He was on duty that Sunday afternoon when the news of the Anoka tornado broke. And with true devotion to duty, he hastened to the stricken city to bring Northwest listeners an on-the-spot report. That announcer was Eddie Gallagher. Hey, that's me. Oh, and by recording, the actual recording, here's the way I sounded a long time ago on that Sunday afternoon.
The tornado lasted about 5 minutes, and the damage it caused in that 5 minutes is, it's impossible to estimate at this point. Of course, you are amazed when you walk down the street and see huge trees snapped over like they were toothpicks and boards driven into cars. Cars turned up on their side, thrown into houses, the sides of houses torn out, and debris all over the place. The roof of the large churches taken off, iron girders twisted as though they were just a little piece of wire. That's what a tornado does.
One of the familiar voices on WCCO back in the 1920s was that of Doug Baldwin. You may remember him in the Mr. and Mrs. Gabby skits he did with Marjorie McCready and as the master of ceremonies on the Call of the North program. Doug Baldwin is now secretary of the Minnesota State Fair Board, and we have asked him to tell us a little story tonight. The story of many years of close association between the Minnesota State Fair and WCCO.
Radio, like everything else, has changed a good deal since I was on WCCO in the early 1920s. You worked at radio more or less in your spare time. Not very many of us were fortunate enough to be able to make a living at it. That situation has changed today, or so they tell me, but back in the 20s, I also worked for the Minnesota State Fair. I had two interests, of course, radio and the fair. I had an opportunity to observe what radio and WCCO could do to help bring about a common understanding of the problems of those who till the soil and those who live in the cities. The cooperation the WCCO has given the Minnesota State Fair all these years is just one example of the service it has given the people of Minnesota in fostering better understanding between people in the city and those who live in small towns and on the farms. During the past 30 years, the years that WCCO has been on the air, the Minnesota State Fair has grown tremendously. On behalf of the Minnesota State Fair, I would like to extend my congratulations to WCCO on its 30th anniversary, and also to express my appreciation to the station for having played so large a part in making the Minnesota State Fair the finest in the nation.
It's rather difficult for us to place our next WCCO personality into our 30th anniversary show from the standpoint of time. She was with the station almost from the beginning, and her name has become so well known, and it was only recently that she left WCCO to go to Hollywood. We're speaking of one of your favorites, Ramona Gerhard. She's probably best known for the theme she adopted, the song Ramona, which she played on many programs on which she was a featured artist. There were so many programs, so many personalities that we would like to mention. We'd like to mention them all if time would permit. Well, here are a few anyway that will bring back fond memories. Remember that friendly voice of the late evening hours?
It's Bob DeHaven time. Here's the 10:30 fellow, Bob DeHaven. He's been such a fellow since January 11th, 1943. He's been taking it easy and playing popular recorded music to add to the pleasantry of Northwest living. Say something in your native Minnesota tongue, Bob.
Well, good evening, everybody. Are you home tonight? Or are you over to Aunt Minnie's to see her quilting for the county fair? Are you holding your girl's hand? Well, if not, hold it. I have easy music such as Here Comes Heaven Again and Basin Street Blues by Fats Waller and Somebody's Rockin' My Dreamboat. I won't tell you every tune because I'm sneaky that way. Billy Butterfield and Margaret Whiting have indicated their opening tune will be There Goes That Song Again. If I fade and stop talking, you'll hear it clean through.
And remember Clellan Card's Almanac of the Year? It was an early morning favorite on WCCO for years. Clellan Card, the working girl's friend, the birdie with the yellow bill, the coffee dunking sessions. We regret that Clellan is ill and is unable to be with us tonight in person. We had planned to reenact his popular almanac show. But here for the sake of memory and old times is Clellan Card with the birdie.
Birdie with the yellow bill hopped upon my windowsill. Cocked her shining eye and says, what did you do with the light? Sock it?
1939. It was an ominous year, and we had begun to realize it all too late. There was Adolf Hitler, Munich, Britain's Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain and his umbrella. Peace in our time, he said, but there was no peace. We're in the 1940s now. The Low Countries, France invaded. Panzer divisions, Nazi spearheads, Blitzkrieg, lightning war. But it wouldn't happen again. The United States would not become involved. A group of students gathered, held a rally at the University of Minnesota. Let God save the king, they said. Uncle Sam is not coming. Let Europe fight its own troubles. But war came. And it came on a Sunday afternoon. The date is December the 7th. 1941.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special news bulletin. The Japanese have attacked Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, by air, President Roosevelt has just announced. The attack also was made on all naval and military activities on the principal island of Oahu.
And that was it. From those smoking ruins at Pearl Harbor arose the anger of an entire nation. It was fight or die. And the next day, before the Congress of the United States, President Franklin Roosevelt said,
"Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy, United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan."
Well, you know what happened after that. It's history now, the history of World War II. You went to war, we all went to war in those days. There was the Normandy landing, General Jimmy Doolittle's first attack on Tokyo, island hopping across the Pacific, bloody fighting all the way. There was the drive across Europe, Italy, France. And at last we crossed the Rhine to the German heartland. Enemy resistance was crumbling. The atomic age came upon the world, Hiroshima, Nagasaki. Words cannot express the way we felt then, and the heartache for our boys. That was real to every family in our land. And radio had a major part in that era of our history. From the very first depredations by the Nazi aggressor, radio was there to cover every historic event. It is also an historic fact that radio news grew to full maturity during these dark years. What had been of secondary interest became of prime importance. And WCCO established at that time a separate news and special events department, a full-time staff of trained news personnel. That department was headed by Sig Mickelson, who later became vice president of the Columbia Broadcasting System. As important as World War II was in the lives of us all, this is a history of WCCO and its part in your life. And there are many important events, and you heard them all over WCCO. You may have forgotten April the 12th, 1945. It was in the midst of a sunny afternoon, and WCCO announcer Paul Wan broke in.
We interrupt this program. Flash. President Roosevelt is dead. The Associated Press has just announced in this flash that we have read to you that the president is dead. We have no further details. However, here is a bulletin just handed me. The White House announced just a few moments ago that President Roosevelt died of a cerebral hemorrhage at Warm Springs, Georgia. We have no further details. Stay tuned.
Less than 2 months later, it was a new president, Harry Truman, who made this historic VE Day announcement.
"This is a solemn but a glorious hour. I only wish that Franklin D. Roosevelt had lived to witness this day."
But the big celebration came 4 months later, August the 14th, 1945, because Japan had surrendered. The war was over. It was a joyous occasion. Crowds streamed out into the streets, on Broadway, on State Street, on 7th Street. And in Minneapolis, WCCO announcer Jack Stanley was describing the delirious scene on Hennepin Avenue. Remember it? It was VJ Day.
"On this, the day that the war with Japan ended. Ever since a few minutes after President Truman announced that the war had ended, this has been one madhouse. It's been a combination of the Aquitennial Parade, the 4th of July, and perhaps New Year's Day as well. It's been a combination of everything. We're going to try to interview a few people here.
Radio is like most business. It's business and a highly competitive one, too. And over the years, WCCO has been competing fiercely with the other radio stations in the Twin Cities area. But when the key is turned in the lock, and when radio people get together to relax, there is a friendly spirit. Yes, even among those who work for different radio stations. And at times, the friendly spirit, the neighborly spirit of helping a friend in trouble, has been extended to those competitive working hours. Speaking in behalf of the other broadcasters of the Twin Cities, we are pleased to have as our guest tonight Stanley Hubbard, president of station KSTP.
"This is one of those very pleasant moments in life. It's a time when you can salute a friend you've known for a long time. And when you've worked, as I have, in friendly cooperation and competition with WCCO for 30 years, you know what an important force this station has been in our community. At a time like this, any broadcaster finds himself in a reminiscent mood. And a few of these memories may help to tell the story of WCCO as I have seen it. There were, of course, the days of WLG before it became WCCO. At about that time, I was heating up my station, WAMD, which 4 years later was become KSTP. I'll never forget the St. Paul Union Station studios of WCCO because They worked fine, except when trains came roaring through, and then the rattle and vibration made them cease broadcasting. The new studios at WCCO and the Nickel Hotel were unique because they were the first studios in the country to have windows so that the visitors could watch the artists performing. The unfortunate part of the WCCO transmitter was the opening on March 5th when President Coolidge was on the Coast Network on the occasion of his inauguration. On that occasion, WCCO opened a superpower station. And the unfortunate part was that all listeners of those days had nothing but crystal sets. And the majority of the receivers of the Cat Whisker No. 2 variety were unable to pick up the sharp WCCO signal, even though they had superpower. I can well remember Don Davis calling me up and telling me that all people were hearing was WAMD, and we immediately canceled our program and proceeded to rebroadcast the WCCO program. I don't believe today that most people realize that those that had crystal sets actually heard WAMD instead of the new superpower WCCO transmitter, and all we had in WAMD at that time was 500 watts. But you know, starting something in radio in those days was like opening up a new church. Everyone sort of pitched in to help. I can recall the opening of our new WAMD studios in the Radisson Hotel. WCCO, like good neighbors, came over to help us open the studio. Well, this reminiscing can become pretty endless, so let's just conclude by saying that you, the listeners of this area, have a lot to be thankful for because of the healthy cooperation and competitive spirit which had existed between WCCO, KSTP, and other stations. You've had and are having the finest radio in the world. And so to you, WCCO, congratulations, sincerely, from KSTP.
Thank you, Mr. Hubbard. Well, our imaginary wanderings have taken us all the way back to the days of Oscar Danielson, the Wheaties Quartet, back into your memories of WCCO as it grew into maturity. It shouldn't be too difficult now to go back to summer. It's July, the sun is out bright and warm. The leaves are on the trees, the flowers are in bloom, and the sun sparkles brilliantly on Minneapolis's lakes. Yes, it's Aquatennial time, the WCCO Aquatennial Show. And remember this sequence from the 1951 show?
Thanks for the plug, Bob. Thanks.
How about that, huh? Now you remember.
Oh, didn't
That's me. A snazzy outfit you're wearing, Arthur. Is that a shirt or one of your sponsor's old tea bags? What is that thing?
You should talk. That's the first time I ever saw a double-breasted swan wrapper. You know, it's a little tight around your kitchen drain.
Yeah. Listen, Chubby.
Look at that pot on you.
Yeah, but at least my lid fits.
Yeah, with that nose, you've got the handle to go with it.
Now, wait a minute. Quiet, or I'll have an NBC vice president bite you in the leg. By the way, Arthur, you know I'm off the air right now. How are things going in radio? Things are so bad, all the programs are giving up. Last week, young Dr. Malone turned in his Band-Aids. The Whistler was only in a half pucker. And Portia isn't facing life anymore. She just stands sideways and lets it squeeze by.
Yeah, and the sponsors aren't so loose with a buck anymore. They're cutting the budgets way down.
Well, what about those big giveaway shows?
They're trimming them down to the bone. Next year, Bob, Stop the Music will be called Shut Up With That Harmonica Already.
What about those big prizes, Arthur? No more ocean liner trip to Hawaii?
No. They'll just put you in a washtub, see? Hand you an egg beater and point you toward St. Paul.
And you've had it, huh? I think we reached lacrosse for that, didn't we? It's the biggest barn I ever worked
in. Isn't this a wonderful place?
Isn't it something, huh? Remember those two corn balls, the Sunshine Boys with their corny jokes, and those minstrel shows?
I sure do, Bob.
And our friends, those Dutch comics, Meyer and Schultz.
Bob, why don't we run through a rehearsal, just in case we ever get an offer, huh?
Well, swell, Arthur. Music might go. Yes, Robert.
Say, a funny thing happened to me on the way to the studio. A bum stopped me and wanted a dollar for his 80-year-old mother.
Did you give it to him?
Gosh, no. What would I want with his 80-year-old mother? Laugh it up. Don't let it lay there.
Hey, you know, Bob, you're effervescent.
What do you mean I'm effervescent?
Yeah, you'd be a good-looking fella. Effervescent for your face.
Hey, Hotshot, tell me, what is a botanist?
I don't know. What is a botanist?
A botanist is somebody who sews on buttons. Boy, am I clickering. Is that my loose upper place?
You know, you remind me of the Green Hornet.
But the Green Hornet stings.
See what I mean?
Of course, you recognize those two familiar voices, Arthur Godfrey and Bob Hope. Over the years, the entertainers who have appeared in these shows reads like a who's who of show business. Eddie Cantor, Gary Moore, Art Linkletter, Ken Murray, Edgar Bergen, Jack Carson, Victor Borga, Helen O'Connell, Kurt Massey, and yes, the Veep himself, Alvin W. Barkley, a former vice president of the United States. The Aquatennial Show is a community service staged each year by WCCO Radio for the Minneapolis Aquatennial Association. And this year, for the very first time, WCCO Radio will present for the people of St. Paul the WCCO St. Paul Winter Carnival Show. Not only has WCCO promoted civic events for the Twin Cities area, but also for the far-flung corners of the Northwest. WCCO has assisted Montevideo in its fiesta days, county fairs by the hundreds, the Wilmer Coffee Fest, the New Ulm Centennial, boxcar days at Tracy, the Bemidji Summer Carnival. And whatever the festive occasion may be in your hometown. At the same time that Sig Mikkelsen was developing the WCCO News Department into an instrument of service to the people of the Great Northwest, a young farmer, legislator, and broadcaster came to WCCO. He established the WCCO Farm Service Department. And during the next 12 years, Larry Haig became the voice of service to the farmers of the Northwest. Because of his invaluable service to WCCO, Larry became general manager of the station 2 years ago. And millions of Northwest listeners will remember the familiar voice of the man who served them so many years, our boss, Larry Haig.
The tradition which we have inherited in this modern day of radio from the early operation of WCCO is a tradition of friendly service to the people living in the region we serve. For 30 years, WCCO has fostered the feeling that all of us living here in the Great Northwest are neighbors, and that this wonderful region of friendly people is really a great big community representing the warm heart of America. And day after day, we hear from our listeners, friendly people who write in and tell us how they feel about the things we're doing here at the station, and that they appreciate our efforts to bind together the five states of this region in a way that make friendly neighbors of us all. It is particularly heartwarming to us here at WCCO to receive confirming evidence from this, from the governors of our neighboring states, and from our own governor, whom you shall hear from in just a moment. Allow me tonight to read some messages of congratulations which we have received here at WCCO from the chief executives of our neighboring states. And I believe that they express the friendly sentiment more eloquently than anything I could say. First, here's a message from the Honorable Walter J. Kohler, the governor of Wisconsin. And he says, in behalf of your many Wisconsin listeners, as the governor of your sister state of Wisconsin, I congratulate WCCO not only for reaching its 30th anniversary, but also for maintaining its leadership in the dramatic development of radio. WCCO has proven itself most worthy to receive the tribute of its millions of listeners in Wisconsin. And we wish you every continuing success to WCCO. And from the Honorable Sigrid Anderson, Governor of South Dakota, comes this greeting. He says, it gives me pleasure to greet WCCO on its 30th anniversary. WCCO has given 30 years of splendid service to a wide area of the Middle West, including South Dakota. We South Dakotans salute you. Best wishes for continuing success. And from the Honorable William S. Beardsley, Governor of Iowa, comes this message. I wish to congratulate Station WCCO on its 30th anniversary. In this 30 years, radio has become one of our dependable sources of fine entertainment, news, and information. I wish to commend you for your fine record of service and wish you every success in the future. And from Bismarck, North Dakota, we have received this message from the Honorable Norman Brunsdale, governor of that great state. He says, congratulations to WCCO on your 30th anniversary. You are to be commended for your excellent programs and services to the public. May I offer the staff of WCCO my best wishes for many more years of successful service. Well, folks, on behalf of everyone here at WCCO, we are humbly grateful for these words of encouragement. We sincerely hope that WCCO will continue to be regarded by everyone who listens to the radio in this region as a strong, clear voice of a truly friendly neighbor.
The Columbia Broadcasting System and WCCO have been associated for 27 of the station's 30-year history. The president of the radio network, Adrian Murphy, salutes WCCO on its 30th anniversary.
Today, radio is everywhere. In our living rooms, our dining rooms, kitchens, bedrooms, playrooms, workshops. In our automobiles and everywhere we go. Stores, restaurants, hotels, just about everywhere. In well over 100 million different places. VSATs all over the nation represent a tremendous investment in radio by listeners, amounting to several billion dollars. And it's an investment that the American people have made because they accept, as a matter of course, that there will always be something worth listening to whenever their sets are turned on. CBS Radio has had the good fortune of being able to provide its listeners with a great share of the nation's most popular programs. Programs that fulfill each listener's desire for news, discussion, and information of every kind, and for music, humor, drama, entertainment of every sort. In the end, however, the true measure of radio is the contribution which the local station makes to its community, in public affairs programming as well as in entertainment. Since its beginning, WCCO has established patterns of public service which have long been admired and followed by broadcasters across the nation. For these and other activities, and for its great roster of local personalities, WCCO has earned so many major awards that one of the national broadcasting magazines was prompted to write that the station was running out of wall space to hang its medals and awards. Over these 30 years, WCCO has proved itself again and again to be a powerful community force in the Northwest, a truly big station in the nation. And every sign points to a long span of top performance in the years ahead.
We have spent some time this evening going back over the years into the history of WCCO. This has been the history of a good neighbor, your good neighbor. But who has the ability to foretell the future? Yes, neighborhoods may change, people may change, but a good neighbor is always a good neighbor. Whatever may come, and we hope it will be continued peace, we hope it will be prosperity. But whether it's good fortune or adversity, WCCO will be your good neighbor for the next 30 years. And we hope the service, the entertainment, the names that come into your home, the programs will be as thrilling to you as the names, the service, and the programs of the past 30 years. The programs and names you have heard in brief review tonight. And what of the future? Perhaps the best man to comment upon that is the governor of the state of Minnesota himself, the Honorable C. Elmer Anderson.
Nothing is likely to stir the memories of Minnesota's people more happily than this review of the development of radio in our region. It has been a rich and rewarding experience to take part in this program, commemorating WCCO's first broadcast 30 years ago. And to hear again the programs and the voices that we associate fondly with the past. On behalf of the people of Minnesota, I want to salute WCCO on its 30th anniversary for the leadership it has provided and is still providing in the development of this important medium of communication. Since the days of the crystal set, radio has enriched the lives of our people with entertainment and information, and WCCO Radio has been a leader in this since the beginning. It is a matter of pride to us in Minnesota that WCCO, as one of the nation's clear channel stations, is located in our state. Its powerful voice carries the message of Minnesota not only to our own people, but but to millions of others living beyond our borders in the neighboring states of the Northwest region. WCCO Radio has become so much a part of the life of Minnesota and of the Northwest that many of us think of it as a member of the family. It is as a member of our family that we commend this station for its 30 years of service to the Northwest. May the neighborly feeling that WCCO has fostered during this first 30 years continue to unite our people in a true community spirit for many years to come.
And while we are good neighbors over the next 30 years, there will be more of those stormy winter mornings. And you will hear again those long lists of school closings. The warning you will hear when Jim Hill comes on with his farm review. On Bob DeHaven's News at 7:15. On the musical clock, Stuart McPherson at 8:30. When you're working through the morning, Mrs. Housewife, doing the washing and the ironing and the cooking and the baking, yes, it's hard work. But your good neighbor brings you Bob DeHaven, Bert Hansen, Jeannie Arlen, Arthur Godfrey and his friends to make those wearisome hours lighter and easier. A woman's work is never done. Lunchtime, the farmer comes in from the fields. There's farm news with Maynard Spies. Yes, that's a service for you folks out there on the farm. But there's entertainment, too. Bob DeHaven, Bert Hansen, Tony Grise, Jeannie Arlen, Joan Iden, Wally Olson and the band, and lunchtime entertainment for both farm and city tastes. Market reports, noontime news with Cedric Adams, news from all around the world, from the town down the road, from your community, from the big city and the small town. Yes, each day has its routine, each day all too much like the day before. But radio goes where you go, from room to room, in the barn, in the laundry, and in the car. In the afternoon, drama, music, entertainment for you. Every weekday afternoon, Art Linkletter's house party, music made in USA. Bright tunes to lighten that afternoon load. Ma Perkins, the homely philosophy of Alan Gray. And a young man named Ed Veman, who's made quite a thing out of being just nobody. And at night, the supper time chore, the husband returns. When do you like your news? At 5 o'clock with Alan Jackson. Or you can hear all the news of the Northwest at 5:15. Late afternoon farm markets with Maynard Spies. News, all the news. News with Lowell Thomas. Dick Enroth in the sports news. The crisp, concise news as presented by Edward R. Murrow. And what do you like for entertainment in the evening? Well, there's Jack Benny, Amos and Andy, our Miss Brooks, Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy. Outstanding drama. Gunsmoke, suspense, gangbusters. Mr. and Mrs. North. There's variety with Clellan Card and his Saturday night party. Junior talent parade. The Perry Como Show. Cedric Adams and his little talk little tune. Hal Garvin, the crackling wit of Hoosier Herb Schreiner. Tennessee Ernie and the Pea Pickers. Yes, radio is with you from morning till night. Radio follows you everywhere. Farm tractors come with radios these days. And it's in the barn, in the car, on the picnic, in the duck blind, and yes, even in the fishing boat. And when Saturday afternoon rolls around, there's a full story of the Minnesota Gophers, thrilling play-by-play. And for the ladies, the Dara Aldrich program. For every member of the family, from dawn to bedtime, it's WCCO Radio.
This is WCCO. St. Paul, Minneapolis.
The early days of crystal sets soon gave way to super hits.
WCCO progressed, and now you hear the very best.
People listen, far and near, better coverage, year by year. Public servant, almost stars, in the homes and in the cars.
WCCO, WCCO, and 24 to 54, a symbol of the best in radio. WCCO, WCCO, and 30 years to neighbor to the great Northwest. WCCO, WCCO, from 24 to 54, a symbol of the best in radio. WCCO, WCCO, and 30 years good neighbor to the great Northwest.
You've been listening to an hour and a half presentation celebrating the 30th anniversary of WCCO, Good Neighbor to the Great Northwest. Your narrator was Eddie Gallagher. Wally Olson conducted the WCCO Orchestra. Special music and arrangements by Ernie Garvin and Vince Bastian. And our thanks to the hundreds of former WCCO employees who have assisted with their memories, their talent, and special recorded material which you have heard tonight. Rolf Hertzgard speaking. This program was written by Jim Borman, Chuck Sargent, and Bob McKenzie, and produced and directed by Bob McKenzie.
WCCO, WCCO.